Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt, the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. My guest today is Danny Johnson from San Antonio, Texas. Danny's a full-time rehabber. He has an awesome blog called Flipping Junkie, which most of you are probably familiar with. He's also the creator of some pretty awesome websites called Lead Propeller and a real estate CRM called ReaMobile. So we're going to talk about these things today, but we're going to talk about how you grow your business, how you get out of having it be a job. So welcome to the show, Danny.
Hey, Sharon. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I think you've been on before, and I always love having you on the show because I like watching your success, and I like watching people who you know, grow their businesses. So why don't we backtrack a little bit and tell for the few folks that might not know who you are, a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try not to ramble on for 2 hours. But, my wife and I started flipping houses I think it's been about 12 years now ago, and the situation was I was working as a software developer for a defense contractor in San Antonio, and I was actually in a room with no windows or anything, and it was, you know, top secret clearance kind of work, but you would think it would be super interesting, but really what I was doing wasn't very challenging and wasn't very exciting. And you know, while I was working there, my father, who had been a contractor doing fix-up for investors, started investing himself. So he was, you know, he became a house flipper, and he was having tons of fun with it, just, you know, every day being excited about the deals he was doing and all that. And I was, you know, just watching him, couldn't be more amazed or surprised at the change in him. As he made that switch and instead of trading, you know, his time for dollars, he ended up, you know, just like having unlimited potential because the more he did and the more deals he did, the more money he made, the more fun he had. So, I started thinking, well, I'd like to do that too. And, you know, educated myself and, started doing it part time. And we actually, my wife and I, worked on the business part time for almost 3 years, I think it was. And, which is pretty challenging, especially when you work at a place where you can't have a cell phone. So, you know, getting the calls from the motivated sellers and things like that, you know, sometimes I'd have to go and make calls in the stairwell and different places like that. But we just did what we had to do to make it work. So evenings and weekends and all of that. But, you know, we did pretty well with it. And, you know, I probably went an extra year than I should have before going full time. And mm-hmm. we got to the point where we realized that we were losing money because we weren't spending the time we should be on the flipping business. So we started, you know, I went full time at that point and, you know, never turned back. So we flipped hundreds of houses since then and are still doing it today.
Okay. Well, that's pretty awesome story. It's interesting. I guess I never really thought about working for a defense contractor and not being able to have a cell phone. Boy, that would be challenging.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quite well.
So especially when you're flipping houses and people call you. So you went, you worked part-time for 3 years and then you left your job. Were you terrified or were you okay with it?
No, actually, I was perfectly fine with it. And actually, I was being laid off from the job. And so when they told me, they kind of approached me sort of timidly about it. And we're kind of thinking that I would take it pretty hard, as most people do. But actually, I think I got a big smile on my face and said, yes, you know, this is like the kick I needed. This is, you know, yeah. I was struggling with getting rid of the security and the steady paycheck. And, mm-hmm. And so, but when they made that sort of decision for me, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. But, yeah, so they were kind of shocked that I was sort of happy that they were letting me go. But
Well, yeah, you're not the first person that's told me that either. And they were going, yes, I get unemployment for a whole year and I get to go do my business. What a win for me. Mm-hmm. So when you started out, now, did your wife work in your business, or was it just you? What did your business look like?
Actually, it was both of us. We spent a lot of time stuffing envelopes and driving for dollars. We actually really still enjoy driving for dollars together, spending that time together. And she keeps me from running into parked cars as my head's on a swivel looking back and forth, even though I'm supposed to be sort of looking at the houses on the left side and she looks at the ones on the right side, but I still can't help but looking over there. But, and so we were doing that and, putting up bandit signs on, Sunday morning at, I think, like 4 or 5 in the morning, just because I couldn't stand being out there putting them up when traffic was around, stopped at the corners looking at me doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of fun doing that, and a lot of occasions where she got a good laugh out of me, slipping off the ladder or something and grabbing onto the pole so I didn't fall and losing a flip-flop in a field of tall grass, all that kind of stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was both of us doing that kind of thing. And during my lunch breaks, I would take off real quick, grab something at a drive-thru, eat it on my way to a rehab while I checked on the work, and then drove back before the hour was up, back to the office, back to work. And, really the nice thing about doing that and starting all of that part-time and having to hustle like that is that it really teaches you to focus on the things that do the most for your business. So instead of, I'm sure I still spend a lot of time doing wasteful things like designing business cards, but when you only have so much time to spend on it, you tend to think through, okay, what should I be doing first? What's the thing that's going to get me the furthest along in this? And what's going to get the phone ringing the soonest with people wanting to sell their house? And so we really focused on putting out bandit signs and sending letters to owners of vacant houses we found driving for dollars and doing all those things, which ended up translating into being a lot more productive when I went full-time. In fact, when I went full-time, I sort of didn't know what to do with myself because I was doing enough part-time that when I went full-time, I had a bunch of extra time, and it was sort of hard for me because I felt like I needed to keep busy, and that's when I started doing wasteful things. Like designing business cards and stuff that it's not really important,
Yeah, but it's fun, if you like doing that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think, when I talk to people, I tell them, especially when you work full time, you really only have one job, and that's marketing. You have to get your phone ringing, and everything else will take care of itself. So that's what you did. You concentrated solely on marketing and then speaking with those sellers.
Right, because, the vast majority of your time, and you sort of end up switching hats a little bit is how my father always termed it, but, where you do a big push of marketing and then you get, quite a few leads and get some deals and you start working on the rehabs and maybe the marketing slows down a little bit, but you can never stop marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But it might slow down a little bit as you take care of handling the rehab. So, yeah, we run into a bottleneck after a certain period of time where I'm trying to do everything as you get more and more rehabs. And typically, just to give you an idea of what I mean by a lot of rehabs was, for the most part, we would end up with, maybe 12 to 15 properties in the pipeline. So in the process of buying them, fixing them up, and then selling them. And then that would translate to maybe rehabbing for 3 to 4 properties at a time.
That's a lot of properties.
Yeah, and so, that's a lot. But my wife and I were able to handle that by having, the first thing that I think that most rehabbers realize is that it really boils down to who you have as a contractor or the several contractors that you use. Because when you're dealing with contractors that aren't responsible or can't complete things in a timely manner or things like that is when the business is really tough. It's when your hair gets gray and you pull out your hair and frustrated and starting to wonder if you really want to continue doing this. But when you have good contractors, you can scale up to that and it's not that hard and they're really taking care of most of Yeah, the rehab, because you get to the point where after you're keeping these guys busy for a while that they know how you operate, you know how they operate, and you don't have to be there all the time.
Yeah. So you were
where
fine.
I was.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it ends up being where I end up maybe just visiting the jobs, you know, once a week.
So do you have a general contractor that oversees all of your jobs, or is that you that does that?
We have a general contractor that oversees them, and then my brother-in-law actually works with me, and he actually oversees the general contractor. So he goes and checks on him and the work that they're doing.
Okay.
But the general contractor hires out the subs for doing all the different things, and then we actually handle a separate we have an HVAC guy, a roofer, a flooring guy, and then a plumber and electrician. So if those things are needed, we'll schedule them. But otherwise, the contractor, the general contractor, handles everything else.
What, would that be like the interior finishes and those sorts of things, the cosmetic things?
Right. So he does all the demo and then, you know, everything as far as like drywall repairs and painting, trim work, cabinets, installing vanities, tiling, different things like that. So basically everything other than the roof, the flooring, unless it's tile because he does the tile. And then electrical or plumbing. And plumbing is mainly, you know, if you're putting in a sink or something, he'll do that kind of work. But if we're having to plumb out something or move something,
mm-hmm.
you know, the slab or something like that, then we obviously have the master plumber do that.
Have him do that. Yeah, and, you know, that's funny that you bring up, that's an seems to be the way you need to do that. People are having problems with their GC, and they're still managing. Seems like they end up managing the GC to a level, or you know, that they shouldn't be doing. The GC's not really, I don't know if you'd say doing his job, or maybe it's that they're not clear on what the responsibilities are. But it sounds like you've got it planned out perfectly, and probably having your brother to oversee the GC is really helpful.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So I'm doing a lot of other things now with. Still flipping, but also doing the software. So I just don't have time to go and do those things. But, you know, and what you said was, you know, if we have it dialed in correctly, and really how you do that is by being clear on what you want. And that's having a written contract that you're going to use with the contractors, because if you can't sit down and write out or know what you need to, have the contractor doing what the responsibilities are, then you need to get that figured out. You know, before you hire somebody. And there's so many ways to get burned by a contractor that you don't know. You really do have to have it spelled out. And so, like, sort of the main points of a contract are things like the start and end date, what happens if they don't finish the job by the end date. And, you know, so typically we have a penalty where, you know, we'll deduct, I think it's $50 a day. For every day past the deadline. And obviously we're fair about it. So if they have everything done, they just need to do exterior stuff and we have storms for 4 days.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to dock them for that. The real purpose of that is to keep them from being gone for a week working on some other job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I heard someone talking about that just last week. Their contractor just seems to vanish. And that was my question. Don't you have a penalty? And my way of thinking is that if you all can mutually agree on a reasonable time frame for the rehab, and like you said, things happen. You know, whether if somebody breaks their leg, then you just get somebody different. You don't just ding your contractor. But if they're not willing to sign on the dotted line that they're going to get the job done at this particular time and then be okay with a penalty, then they're probably not any chance. There's probably not any chance they're planning on getting the job done.
Right, right. If they hesitate and make you feel like you're, you know, trying to be too hard on them or something, you need mm-hmm. to find a different contractor, because good ones don't think like that. It's, yeah. So, and then you've got to think like, well, if they're gone for a week, why are they gone for a week? You know, mm-hmm. they've got work to do that they're going to get paid for, right? Well, it ends up being a problem with the fact that maybe they're getting paid too much too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where having your scope of work and then a draw schedule as well. So you clearly define every single thing you want done at the house with the scope of work, including what materials. Don't ever leave it up to the contractor to choose materials, because you're probably not going to like what they're going to choose. So go to Home Depot and get the SKUs and the prices and all that kind of stuff for what materials you want to use. But then in the draw schedule, what you do is you base, and I know this is something that's kind of hard for people that haven't had experience with construction, and I didn't when I started. So I learned along the way. I made mistakes, but I still tried and I learned. But you break up the draws. And so when we have a new contractor, I always start with more draws. So if it's, you know, like a $10,000 job, I might even have five draws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll start them out with maybe $1,500 to do demo after the first day of them doing demo, not before they start.
Not before they start.
Right. And then I have it broken up to the next step. So the next probably thing is to put stuff back together. So it's installing drywall. So if they do that, then they'll get the next draw. And so you specify after certain things are done, they'll get paid. I think whenever I hear about people getting burned by a contractor, almost always it's because they paid them for half of the job up front.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always. And it's just insane to me that someone's willing to give somebody else that kind of money without having done anything. But
okay. So you, Joe, would you say you have, let's say on a job that's $20,000, would you still have maybe five draws for that? That seems like a really good amount.
Right, yes, I would still probably have about five.
Yeah.
Right, and yeah, and so in the beginning, like a $10,000 job, you know, I'd probably start with five. After three or four jobs and everything's been going well with them, then I'd probably knock that down to four or three.
Okay.
No, you know, almost to where it's like, you know, you sort of need to time it to where it's almost about like a check a week because their guys need to get paid and all that kind of stuff. If you try to hold out and you only have two draws or something, then there's going to be times where if they're not good managers of their money, you know, they're going to have spent a lot of that money too soon and then be asking for more money before the work that needs to be done is done.
Mm-hmm. So do you buy most of the materials or do they?
Oh, no,
they
no.
They buy the materials. Okay.
Right. Yeah, it's all the bids are always labor and materials. I do not. In fact, I sold my truck so that I couldn't be guilted into going to pick up anything.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I spoke to somebody recently from Minnesota, and they cannot buy materials because then the people are deemed employees.
Hmm.
So they don't
yeah,
do
have
it.
To be careful about that.
Yeah, different laws in different states. So now, when you started out, though, did your brother, was he with you from the beginning? Or
no.
Did you, how did you, like, go from just Danny and you and your wife to having a people, you know, to, you know, I understand the whole subcontracting process, how that works, but tell me how someone who's just trying to grow from a rehab or two here and suddenly needs to do four or five, how do they find those initial people?
Well, that's sort of a tough thing because, you know, there's people like Justin Williams who put a Craigslist ad out and got an amazing person to handle a lot of his business.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people like me, you know, it's family, so I brought somebody in from the family to start doing some of those things. And I think what it boils down to is really just finding someone that's a go-getter and a self-starter, because if they're having to be told exactly what to do all the time, it's going to, you know, keep you busy doing that all the time instead of having them do the work. But a lot of times I think it helps when you have somebody that's really interested in the business, and most people are interested in this business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's finding somebody maybe that you know to bring on. And it's one of those things where you start them out with small tasks first and see how it goes. Because if you're having trouble with them with small tasks, do not move them up into greater tasks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the whole hire slow and fire fast. So if
right.
If they're not doing well with small tasks, you just have to say, okay, this isn't working. And then you get somebody else. And that's the same thing with contractors. So I think the people that struggle in flipping houses and have trouble with the rehabs and stuff like that is because, like I did at first, I had trouble changing things when somebody wasn't doing something right.
Yeah.
It was sort of hard for me. You just have to say, you know what, I don't care. I just have to do it because I know I need to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so much, everybody wants the path of least resistance, and so they end up just like ignoring it or saying it's going to change, the person's going to get better, but they're not. And so,
yeah.
You know, if you can be honest with yourself and force yourself to make those hard decisions, you're going to be a lot better off.
Yeah, and if there's one thing people take away from this podcast, I learned that one the hard way. You know, I tried my best. You know, I'm what I call a saver. I want to save everybody. And, you know, because I'm sure that all the excuses that this guy gave me were real excuses. But at the end of the day, it was business. And I should have let him go quick when he started that nonsense. So, but the good news is you usually only do that once. And, Then you learn. So let me ask you this. If someone is, let's say someone is in the position where they're doing a rehab one or maybe even two along and they're hiring the subcontractors and that, and they want to hire a general contractor to do that, how does someone compensate them? Is it deal based or is it our job, you know, job based? How do you compensate a general contractor?
Okay, so I'm probably not the best person to ask for having a general contractor on your team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because from the beginning I've always done it is find sort of the guy that's got a small operation that does construction work, and he's got his people underneath him to do the work. And so it's always just a bid on the job. I haven't had anybody on the team that I pay and compensate to handle the rehabs.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and that's the way I think everybody should start anyways. And that's one of the beautiful things about driving for dollars. If you're driving these neighborhoods where people are doing rehabs looking for vacant houses, you're probably going to see some being worked on by crews that are fixing them up for another investor that already bought a house. And you stop and talk to those contractors and get their business cards, and you can look at kind of work that they're doing, whether they keep the job site clean and all that kind of stuff, and then you found a good contractor, most likely. And so when you get a deal, you can call them and have them give a bid for the job and to handle the whole job. And with contractors like that, I don't really need someone to manage them because they're sort of managing themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think until you get a lot, like a big operation, I would say yours, if you're doing a lot of rehabs like you do, then I can see where you would need someone to manage the GCs. But that gives people, a way to know. So everything is a bid and then bid and a draw.
Right. And okay. If you have somebody on your team to manage several GCs or something, or I guess it's all terminology, but you know, anybody you bring on your team is really just based on, you know, pay should just be based on sort of what they need and what they're worth to you and your time.
Okay. So now, as your business grew, was it a deliberate thing, or did you just really crank out the marketing and it just kind of exploded?
Yeah, so it just sort of happened that way. I mean, we would have planning meetings and say, hey, let's start increasing things. And actually, we're in the process of doing that right now again, because I've sort of ramped down my business over the last couple of years as I've worked on these other projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at the point now again where I'm ready to get going with more flipping. So right now we have a rehab we just finished. We're working on another two, and then we're kind of close on one. I think December 1st is another rehab that we're going to be doing. But I want to get cranked up and doing a lot more. And so we're deliberately planning that out. So it's going to be, what's the marketing budget? It's the first thing I come up with. How much marketing am I going to do to generate the number of leads I need to get to land the number of deals I want?
Yeah, and that's an important part, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, something I realized again, probably for the 20th time recently, was, you know, as I ramped down the business over the last couple of years so I could, you know, focus a little bit more on some other projects, we've done some marketing, tried some new marketing and stuff like that, and nothing really seemed to pull very well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the realization that I said that I've had probably 20 times was the fact that when you try to, and the reason why I'm bringing it up is because I think a lot of new people make this mistake, and the mistake is, I'm going to get a list of absentee owners, and I'm going to mail 500 letters to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to cost me a couple $100 or even, you know, maybe, you know, $300-$400. And then they maybe get one call, and they're not motivated. And they say, oh, this doesn't work. I can't throw more money down into this black pit, you know, throw any more money away. So I'm going to just try something else. and maybe they put out 20 bandit signs, and they get one call, and the city calls them, tells them to take them down or something, so they give up on that. And it's like you're never going to get traction doing things that way. You have to be consistent and know that it's an investment. And obviously there's some things that you can maybe do that are less expensive, but as long as you just pick something and don't give up on it, because it takes time to get, you know, the compounding effect of your marketing going. And, you know, so if you're sending letters and you're committed to sending letters and you're going to send out 2,000 to 3,000 a month, you know, that's a lot of letters and you're probably likely going to get something from that. And then over time, you're going to get people that call you from a letter you sent 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just pushing past that real tough part where you feel like you're throwing money down a hole and starting to get one. Because really, if you, you know, as soon as you get that first deal and if it's a wholesale and maybe you make $10,000 on it, then that's a lot more money to throw at marketing, and then you're just off to the races.
Mm-hmm. So is direct mail still your primary lead source, that or that in your websites?
No, actually, the website is. And I'm going to be doing a lot more direct mail, though, as part of the marketing push that I'm going to be doing.
Okay. So in your office now, do you have team members that do your marketing, or do you all do that, outsource it, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we just do it. Actually, my brother-in-law does that as well, so he handles keeping the marketing going out. I handle the website, but he handles the getting the marketing going out. And it's really not that much work because we use click to mail for a lot of the mailing. So it's you know, we're not stuffing envelopes anymore.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that amazing when you do that? We just go, what was I thinking? So let's talk a little bit. I know you've mentioned a couple of times that, you know, we've both kind of been in the same mode where we've been doing other things other than strictly, just deal flow. You've been in the process of building some systems. I mean, you've got a great website, so you've been working on your website product, and we talked a little bit about you've got a great thing, which I love, called Ria Mobile, that is in beta. So you want to talk about those a little bit? And I think it's
sure.
I think it's so important that people understand that if you don't have systems and you don't have tools, you're just going to be a manual laborer forever.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of how these things came about. And so regarding the websites, on my blog on flippingjunkie.com, on the blog a couple years ago, I did a series of 34 weeks where I explained everything I was doing in my business. And so I was showing all the marketing I was doing, the leads I was getting, and discussing every single lead that I was getting, which is a lot more in-depth than I've seen in most other places. But what it ended up being was, you know, people started to realize that most of my leads were coming from my website. And so I was getting daily requests of where to get a website. And I didn't really even have anywhere to send those people. And, you know, just other than hire somebody to develop it for you. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I didn't have the time to be developing people's websites. But after a while, you know, I got so many of them, I said, you know, why don't I build some and then just people can use them? And it won't be a one-off thing where I just build one for one person. I just build several, and they can choose from them. And mm-hmm. that's what became Lead Propeller. So leadpropeller.com is the website's products, and it's built on all my experience of buying houses through my website for, what, I think 10 years now. So all the things I've learned and the improvements I've made over those years go into those websites. But the REI Mobile, that's the lead management system. And so Lead Propeller websites have like a small backend system that keep the leads, and the leads when they come in get texted to you, to your phone, and then also to your email. But they're also stored in a database at the back end. But that just sort of holds the leads. REI Mobile is more of a management system where you have all the contacts, all the leads, keep track of your marketing, all that kind of stuff. And what that came from was within the first year, I think, of being in the business, I quickly realized that I needed a way to keep track of all the leads that I was getting. Because especially as you do more and are in a market that gets hotter and you get a lot more competition from other investors, the investors that do follow up are the ones that are going to end up with the most deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you don't have a system in place to be able to do follow up, And so you're going to fall behind and lose out on a lot of the deals that you would otherwise get. And so I developed a system, a database system on my computer that I kept track of that stuff. But then that became a problem because I always had to go back to my house because I was officing out of the house at that time to enter in all the information and keep track of it. And so over enough time, I decided, okay, well, I'm going to make this web-based so that I can get in there and do this whenever I want as long as I have an internet connection. And so I did that and was able to keep track of all the leads and follow up and all that kind of stuff. And then it got to the point where I said, man, I really would like to be able to do this without having to have a laptop fired up and connect through, you know, the cell phone link or something like that. You know, I'd rather just be able to do this from my smartphone. And so that's when this iteration of the software started being developed so that it's mobile, mobile responsive so that it works on the cell phones and smartphones as well as the tablets and stuff through the mobile browsers. But that way I have access to everything right there, and that's the basis for the software.
That's awesome. I mean, I took a look at it, and it really is nice. You can have bird dogs, and I like one thing that I really like about it is that you can have levels of access. I think that's that is so important, and that's something that is not available in a lot of systems. So the fact that you could have your bird dogs entering things, you could maybe have an assistant that had access to certain things, but maybe not everything. I think I think that is really important.
Right. Yeah, and that was one of the things that over the last couple of years, as you know, we brought on people to work with us, that was necessary because I didn't want to give them full access to everything. You know, to all my leads. So we built the system to be able to allow having team members and then data entry members and different stuff like that where you can give them access to just their leads that they enter for you. And then you obviously have access to all the leads that your team enters. And then also, you know, the data entry people. So if you have a call system, you know, some people use Pat Live to answer their calls and then enter the information. And so they can set up an account for them to use to enter information into their to their system. And, you know, we even went as far as making it to where you can set up, like, certain team members have access to certain other team members' leads. And the beautiful thing about all of it is if you have several people doing different marketing for you that are all sort of working with you, if I go in there and enter a lead that I got and one of my other team members had already entered that lead or it was already in the system, it's going to tell me that. So we're not competing with each other. You know, and it's like we can share all that information and know exactly. Then you can see all the notes and see everything that sort of happened with the lead over time. So,
very interesting. Well, and Danny mentioned that right now the REI Mobile is in beta, but folks can still have this, and they need to go to your site and request an invitation to join. Is that how that works?
Right. So we're in beta right now. So we do have customers already that are using it and enjoying it. Like you said, you've been in there. And we're limiting it to beta invite only. And, you know, all you have to do is go to the site reimobile.com. And when you look at pricing, the buttons will say to request an invite. And then you simply just fill out some information, send it to us, and then we'll give you access to be able to sign up for it. But that's just to, so that you are well aware that we are in beta. It is a stable product, but we're still developing it. And from time to time, you might notice something small and weird that happens, or, you know, you're not going to lose data or anything like that. But we're still, you know, improving it. So that's where we're at, and that's why we require an invitation to be a part of the beta.
Awesome. Well, I will put all of that information here on the site so that people, you know, that can have access to that. And you have any words of wisdom for folks just getting started, Danny? I know you're just full of wisdom.
Oh, I don't know. Well, at least you said wisdom, right? Not something, but
wisdom.
But no, words of wisdom. I mean, I think the biggest thing is if you're new in this business and you're wanting to get started, to make the commitment and make a marketing plan and then stick to it and know that it's an investment. And if it takes doing more legwork in the beginning, like running around putting up flyers saying that you buy houses at every laundromat in town, that you're going to make that commitment and stick with it. And as you see the leads start coming in, the calls start to come in, realize that it is a numbers game. I mean, you can't expect to do willy-nilly marketing and have things start to work out to where you get a ton of great deals. It just doesn't work that way. So if you want to break through that tough part of the beginning and getting going in this business, that's what you have to do.
That is excellent advice. Well, thank you so much, Danny, for coming on the show today. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And what's the best way for folks to reach you? And if you want to tell them that, and I'll put a link here on the site too.
Sure, yeah. The best way to reach me is at flippingjunkie.com. That's the blog, Flipping Junkie, and Junkie is J-U-N-K-I-E. And that's the best way to reach me.
Yeah. And I can tell you that Danny has a great blog, so you should head over there and take a look. Well, thanks again, Danny, for coming on the show, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. And I think that's it for today, folks. This is Sharon Vornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog. And I'll be back soon with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing.